Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
With Marks and Spencer.
On News Talk.
We are coming to you today from Langton's Theatre, Langton's Hotel in Kilkenny, with thanks to our friends in Marks and Spencer's. On the stage with us, Fionnuala Jones, Deirdre Malumby and Leslie Williams. Good afternoon to you all.
Hi, guys.
Deirdre, this is your first time being at an outside broadcast.
It is.
Ooh.
Is it exciting?
Is it exciting?
It is. It
yeah, really have
is.
You been outside Dublin before?
A few times.
Leslie never had, or until you kind of went on outside broadcast. So you know, don't worry, you'll acclimatise. So what Bridget Jones, obviously, we're talking about today. Is that everything you'd hoped for, or had you hoped?
I really like the third one. I really like Bridget Jones's Baby. And the second one I've only actually seen it once. I remember there being a weird scene where she's in prison singing with the women. And I don't know, I felt
Highlanders
a bit tonally off.
In prison.
Yeah. Okay. And this one would be third out of four. Is that good? It's okay.
It's not great now, really. It's only four. So tell us about the three wines we're talking about today.
So three completely different wines from three different places, but we are starting with the most romantic wine of the three, I think, which is a Pinot Grigio. So it is, however, a different Pinot Grigio to what most people are used to. It's pink. It's blush-coloured, as they would say, because people forget that Pinot Grigio is actually a grey-pink color. I mean, the green means gray, which is a light pink, and so on. So, there's loads of lovely raspberry fruits and citrus and so on. It's from Contepuli. Now, what makes it romantic, in my opinion, is it's made between Venice and Verona. Verona's where Romeo and Juliet came from, and Venice has to be arguably one of the most romantic cities on earth, if not, you know. Do you think it's more interesting than Paris as a date city? So they would have actually, and see this idea of picking the grapes really young and making them off the skins to make a white wine, as we do with most Pinot Grigio, that wouldn't have been a thing back in Romeo and Juliet's time. They would have been using just standard fermentation, let the grapes with natural fermentation, and the wine would have been pink. So it is.
Ah,
so
that's
see what
interesting.
I'm saying? Yeah, so yeah. It's a relatively new innovation, the whole dry, rather flavourless white Pinot Grigio. This actually, I think, has some flavour. I think it has some nice sort of red fruits and some roundness. And it also allows more sugar to come into the wine, just a little more roundness. I don't mean sweet, just fullness, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking kind of prawn cocktail, kind of scampi and chips if you're feeling a bit more down to earth, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can have posh scampi and chips.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And it's not... Is it technically a rosé then?
So it is a rosé.
It's not a very rosé looking.
No, it's this pale rosé is all the rage now. It started really by the Provence rosé style, which is very pale, and then everyone wants that. And I mean, to be honest, I mean, the Spanish rosé sometimes get a bit of like, oh, I don't like the look of that. It's going to be too sweet because it's darker rosé. But actually, they're often just as dry. People think it's going to be drier if it's paler.
Yes.
That isn't actually the case. I mean, it really depends on the wine and the winemaker, you know.
Yeah.
So Pinot Gris should be grey. It should be a grey-pink colour, you know.
Okay, so it's kind of living up to its...
Yeah, that's what I feel. And I think it's being true to itself, which is a good advice on Valentine's Day. Be true to yourself, you know.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
So, you split up with them. You hate them. Come on. Before you waste all that money. And very briefly, what's the
So we have a South African Sauvignon Blanc, which I would argue is the second best place to get New World style Sauvignon Blanc from. I mean, New Zealand kind of has the market cornered, but if you want that style, often you can get better value from South Africa. And the third wine is arguably the best place in the world to buy red juice from at the moment, which is Portugal. Really inexpensive. You can get wines from Portugal, you know, for very little money, relatively speaking, that have loads and loads of flavour. And this is from around Lisboa. And I think it's quite juicy. There's a bit of spice to it as well. So,
Is red juice a technical term?
People talk about the juice.
Do they?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Like, where's the cheapest juice? So Spain produces the cheapest juice in the world at the moment for wine. But like whiskey terms, we would talk about the juice as well. Like someone asking me, I was on a trip, I think I mentioned this before, to Kentucky, and I went to about 20 distilleries, and the best juice I had was in one particular one, and that's what, you know, that's how I would refer to it.
By juice, they mean the actual
whiskey. The drink. What's the actual juice? Yeah, sorry.
Just sounds kind of icky, calling it juice.
Maybe it's just me that does this.
Everybody does it. Right, so John Lithgow is going to be Dumbledore?
Seems very, very likely. Yeah, leaked earlier this week that he was very close to finalising a deal as part of this Harry Potter TV series. I think I talked about the casting for Snape a couple of weeks ago, that it was Papa Asedju was going to be Snape. He's in I May Destroy You, obviously a much smaller name than John Lithgow. I can't believe he won 6 Emmys, that kind of begs belief. He's just so huge. But yeah, HBO have come out and said they're not commenting, but they understand that it's very high profile. We understand why there's so much speculation. Obviously, massive shoes to fill off the back of the late Richard Harris and Michael Gambon in the actual franchise. And then Jude Law. I think people forget that Jude Law played Dumbledore in the Fantastic Beasts franchise. Okay. He played like the younger version of him. So yeah, this is slated to come, I think, late 2026 or early 2027, because I think they're still casting the three children, Harry, Hermione, and Ron. So
yeah, did they have to go for a tall actor? Because they can just put somebody on a set of ladders.
For Dumbledore.
Yeah, for Dumbledore.
Maybe they didn't have the budget for the ladders, you know?
Yeah.
They were like, we have to spend the money wisely or we cannot spend the money on ladders.
Yeah, okay, well, that kind of makes sense.
I'm like, kind of, as much as I think this series is a little bit cursed, I am kind of intrigued about John Lithgow because he is just very good.
He's brilliant in everything. I mean, he's done comedy, he's done
off the back
tragedy,
of Conclave,
Love,
Incredible.
He's done, literally everything. He's brilliant, yeah. You know?
He doesn't, but Dumbledore is kind of cuddly.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah.
John Lithgow can be cuddly, no?
No, there's always a little hint of sinister off him.
Well, but the gay movie he made with what's his name? They played an older gay couple, and the one that was going to be fired from their job because of the teacher and what was
no.
It?
You don't know the movie? Way too young for that, sorry.
No, it's very recent.
She wasn't let into it.
No, it's really, like, it's only about 5 or 6 years ago. It was that English actor who we all know, whose name I can't think of.
Yeah. He was great in that.
He was great. I know that.
It was a very gentle.
He's great in that film.
He wore a hat once. Yeah, I remember him well. Okay, you are listening to the Moncrief Show and News Talk. We'll take a break back in a couple of minutes. Right, let's move on to our second wine of the day, Leslie.
Okay, so second wine is called Mystery Bay Sauvignon Blanc from the Western Cape, which is South Africa, obviously. So kind of mountainous region, so cooler breezes. I mean, we say Sauvignon Blanc likes a cool climate. Now, this is within reason. I mean, it wouldn't do so well in, County Louth or somewhere, you know. But, you know,
we'd cooler like to apologise to all our listeners in County Louth.
And we'd struggle in the southeast, even, I'm afraid. You know?
God.
So, yeah.
Okay.
No, so it you need 30 degrees temperature all through July and August. So by cool, we really mean cool nights to keep the acidity and so on. And this is quite a mountainous region, so you get warm days, cool nights and so on. This is actually an interesting enough collaboration with this wine, with a company called Journey's End, a charity, and they basically, for every bottle sold, a free meal is provided to one of the poorer villages in the village beside the winery, which is good. But lovely kind of crisp apple fruits, a little bit of tropical, nice bit of density. I mean, I love Chilean Sauvignon Blanc as well, but I always feel that they're better for the lighter, simpler ones. If you want the sort of ripe, round, full-on, grassy, I mean, there's a lot of pea flavors in this. That can be a negative thing. Too much pea can give a kind of green bean character, but actually here, I think it is actually kind of a fresh pea flavor.
Yeah.
Okay, Reezy Beezy, I'm going to talk about rice and peas, right? That's a really classic. It would be great with.
Every time. Every time.
Is Mystery Bay a real place, or they just trying to make it sound exciting?
They made it up, I think.
Okay.
Sorry.
Yeah, it sounds good.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? Yeah.
And it's only 11%, I see, so it's nice.
Yeah, and actually, the first one was only 11% as well. So
yeah.
It's getting harder and harder to find lower. Wines that are not too strong. Mm. And if anyone's worried about calories, it's the actual percentage of alcohol you've got to look at. I mean, the sugar is very little,
Yeah.
I have a formula, but for every percent of alcohol, the calories go up quite a bit. But for every 10 grams of sugar, the calories go up by, I think, 30 for 10 grams of sugar, and these wines would have like 1 or 2 grams of sugar, so there'd be almost no sugar in them.
Okay, does it say it on the label?
No, it's kind of, there is a tip. I mean, if you search for a wine and put sugar G/L, frequently somebody has put a text sheet up somewhere of almost every wine. I mean, like the Canadian government do it on their website. If the wine is sold in Canada, it'll be on their website. If it's sold in Finland, it'll be on the Alko website, which is the state company in Finland. So I actually frequently do
all the countries Donald Trump hates. Isn't that interesting?
Exactly. Yeah. But yeah, so grams per liter. So I mean, a port would have obviously several, you know, it might have 100 grams of sugar per liter. So there it would make a difference. But for wine, really, it's just alcohol. So in terms of calories, you know.
Okay, that is very interesting. Now, Variety have named the 100 greatest TV performances of the 21st century.
They have, yeah. Now, they've also immediately walked back by saying that it's, you know, it's less of a ranking, more of a celebration of the great TV we're enjoying at the minute and, you know, all the best TV that's yet to come. But, like, I don't know, if you're going to rank something, stand your ground. Oh, you know what I mean?
Every agent in Hollywood is onto them going, how dare you?
Truly. It's a bit American-centric, I would have thought, because I thought number one was kind of surprising. So at number five, we have Bryan Cranston in Breaking Bad. I think that's kind of fair enough.
Okay.
Lisa Kudrow in The Comeback as Valerie Cherish, which I have not watched, but everyone recommends to me. It's supposed to be very good. Elizabeth Moss in Mad Men, obviously Peggy, classic Peggy. Number two, Jeremy Strong, my number one boy for Succession. I will say maybe robbed of number one because he was just so insane in Succession. And then number one, they have, of the greatest TV performances of the 21st century, they have Julia Louis-Dreyfus for Veep. But I don't know if that's just, again,
she's brilliant.
Yeah, again, I will say the same. I haven't fully watched Veep, another one on my ever-growing list to watch. But I don't know, again, if it's just because of the air quotes times we're in, but because it's so out of
I wouldn't have put her at number one at all.
I thought it was very surprising, like it just wasn't. And like, I looked at a couple of the other ones, like Jeremy Allen Strong is at number 100, obviously, for The Bear, because we've obviously only gotten three seasons of that, and there's more to come with that, I would say. And maybe it's not even his best work yet, but I don't know. I thought it was like a very mixed top five.
Yeah, were there any old Irish people in there at all?
Were they patently racist
in their choices?
I actually didn't see. There could be now, so listeners, maybe someone else go scan the list and see.
Yeah, if anyone
do
like
my job
text
for
it
me.
And,
but
yeah,
and who would make that list is the thing. Do you know what I mean? Irish.
Highlander girl. What's her name? Katrina Balfe.
Oh, she's very
good. Outlander.
Outlander.
She's good enough.
But it's not like there's room.
Yeah, true. Yeah. True. Yeah.
For at least one person.
Yeah. Who
I don't know, somebody from Fair City. have more pride in your native industry.
Paul Mescal and normal people.
Yes, of course. Where are they? And we have they've announced who this is now for a TV series of Legally Blonde, is it?
They're doing a prequel TV series of Legally Blonde on Amazon Prime Video, and they've just cast the young Elle Woods. They're not going to de-age Reese Witherspoon, thank God, because that would be demented. It's going to be Lexi Mindtree. They did a big like audition process, and Reese announced her and was delighted and loved the auditions she sent in. So it's going to look at Elle Woods in high school as we learn about the life experiences that shaped her into the iconic young woman we came to know and love in the first Legally Blonde film, to which I would kind of argue Elle doesn't really become who she is until that first film.
Yeah.
Do you know? Not to nitpick the Legally Blonde franchise. But.
No, but yeah, but like at the start, she was just she was your archetypal dumb blonde hoping to marry a guy with a trust fund from finance.
Yeah. There you go. So Mindtree hasn't been in a lot. She's done like bits on Law and Order SVU and the Murdaugh Murders, and The Paramedic Who Stalked Me is actually one of her credits. That's interesting. And Crowdsourced Murder. So bit of a newbie. So
The Paramedic Who Stalked Me.
The Paramedic Who Stalked Me. I really want to watch it now, to be honest.
Gosh. Okay. And the Rachel Incident is the latest book adaptation.
Yes. We've got so many book adaptation news announcement this week, including The Rachel Incident, which is by Cork author Caroline O'Donoghue. I won't give away the plot because I do just think everyone should read it. It's brilliant. But Channel 4 has gotten the rights for it. It's going to be an 8-part series. They're working on it with Element Pictures, who obviously did Normal People and Poor Things. No casting yet, but Caroline O'Donoghue is working on it with Jen Statsky, who's the co-creator of Hacks, which is impossible to get over here. I think it does have a streaming home now.
No, it's on now.
It's on now. Yes. Now. So go watch
on now TV. All three series are on there now. Yeah.
It's supposed to be. It's brilliant. And
so how did you see it if it's impossible to get over here?
Huh? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, moving along.
Curious enough, I saw it too, and I can't tell you how I
saw
it.
Exactly. It's all a big secret.
I saw it in a dream.
Yeah. I made it up. The Rachel Incident is about this like Cork friendship. They become friends in college and things happen. That's such a bad sell, but like just go read the book. And if you're not bothered reading the book, watch out for this because it's going to be very, very good. I'd imagine we'll get it next year, maybe.
Is there murder or romance? Which is it?
Bit of romance, yeah. No murder. No, not murder that I can remember. I read it a while ago, but I don't think there's any murder from what I can remember.
Okay, we do have to take a break. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. We'll take a break. And after that, we'll be talking about the new Bridget Jones movie.
Ah, Mrs. Darcy.
Mr. Wallaker.
Why is your granny wearing pyjamas?
Bridget, you're a widow with two wonderful children. My advice to you is put your own oxygen mask on first. You just have to get laid.
Shaz is right.
Oh, my God.
It's been 4 years now.
You're effectively a nun. Very, very naughty.
I set you up on Tinder.
What Tinder?
Mommy! Mabel, suck up the tree!
We're going to die!
Everything all right, Mrs. Darcy?
Oh, my God.
Hiya.
I've cloned a magical man tree.
Hello.
You can call me Rockstar.
Bridget Jones.
But you can call her Mummy.
Is that the tree, Adonis?
If you don't shag him, I will.
How old are you?
28.
Oh.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm 29.
That's Bridget Jones mad about the boy, the fourth Bridget Jones film. So, I love the way in that clip that when somebody suggested to Bridget Jones that she get laid, that she was surprised at the notion as if this hadn't happened to her dozens of times before. The suggestion, I mean. So it's mad about the boys. So I assume the whole thing is that they're younger men.
Yeah, so I suppose like we need to start by setting this up. So it's been 4 years since Mark Darcy has died, which is very sad. So Bridget Jones, one true love. And Colin Firth does appear in the movie, you'll be happy to hear at least, in like little kind of moments where she's like kind of picturing him there or remembering how it used to be. So that's kind of quite bittersweet. But anyway, also back to the franchise is Daniel Cleaver, who is played so brilliantly by Hugh Grant. But those two characters are, they kind of have more of a friendship now than anything. But still, it's great to see him back because he wasn't there in the third movie. So it's been 4 years since he's passed away, and Bridget has decided, you know what, it's time to go back to the real world. So she is back to her job as a TV producer. She's hired help for raising her two kids there because she's a single mum now. And she is on the dating apps, and that is how she ends up meeting Rockstar, who you might have seen in the clip there, played by Leo Woodall, who people might remember from the Netflix series One Day. He is a, you know, the new strapping young, you know, love interest. But there is another love interest, who is Mr. Woodall, played by Chiwetel Ejiofor, who is her son's science teacher. So, you know, there's no shortage of men in Bridget Jones's life. But, I mean, she's so lovely and charismatic. Can we really be surprised?
Yeah, so that's the setup then, essentially. Yeah. Which one does she choose? Or does she choose, well, I suppose that's the ending. Yeah. Does she choose either of them?
I mean, it's a romantic comedy, so you can probably tell where it's going as you're watching the movie. But still, you know, it's got all the kind of, you know, Bridgetisms and Bridget tropes that we all know and love. Now, it did kind of irk me slightly. It's funny, I know that there's this huge move of like nostalgia in movies at the moment. I did feel like it felt a little cheap, the fact that they were throwing in so many references to the original Bridget Jones movie. I mean, you have her in the, like, you know, the red pajama top with the penguins on it that's so iconic from the first movie. I mean, that thing must be rank by now. It's over 20 years old. Daniel Cleaver at one point makes a joke about her really big knickers, which again is, dude, why are you talking about something from 20 years ago? Get over it.
They're bad. We did an item on it during the week. You can, they double up as curtains as well now. Anyway, sorry, interrupted.
And even like the ending of the movie, I'm like, no, stop trying to recreate the first film. So it did kind of irk me a bit. But at the same time, you know, Renee Zellweger, she is just so naturally charismatic in this iconic role of Bridget Jones. And of course, she's gone on to win like a couple of Oscars, you know, since first playing her in this series. So she is as adorable and lovable as ever, as she gets into some very hilarious situations, including accidentally announcing to a live studio audience about having a, you know, really fun night of, you know, rampant sex, essentially. So
cool.
That's fun.
Yeah. And so why is it only the third best Bridget Jones film?
I mean, it's just, yeah, the references, I would say, kind of irked me. I don't know if I always believed in her chemistry with the new kind of male interest necessarily. I actually thought of all the men in this movie, she probably shared the most kind of natural chemistry with Hugh Grant's Daniel Cleaver, to be honest with you. And they end up kind of sharing a lot of like witticisms with one another. And they end up having like a couple of quite poignant scenes as well, which I wasn't quite expecting. So I almost kind of wanted to see like that explored a little more. But then if you're like loyal to the series, you're like, she can't possibly end up with Daniel. That's impossible. You know, it would be wrong, you know?
Yeah. Does it say how old she is?
It doesn't actually. So there's a scene, you might have actually seen it in the clip, where like the new love interest Rockster admits that he's 29 and she jokes, oh, I'm 35 or something. So she never actually says that she's nowhere in her 50s at this point, you know?
Okay. I just wonder, say if they like made a, say if they cast Leslie there in actually, no, that's a bad example. What woman would say no? But if they cast a man in the say in his 50s and then he was dating 25-year-olds, that's the ick for everybody.
Yeah. I mean, it is kind of a trend in movies at the moment. Like, you'll probably remember, like, well, obviously we had Baby Girl just earlier this year, which was Nicole Kidman with a younger man. She also did a Netflix movie on basically the same subject matter with Zac Efron last year. And then there was The Idea of You with Anne Hathaway, which was kind of a recreation of the whole Olivia Wilde, Harry Styles thing. So
iconic.
It does seem to be
incredible.
It's actually really good. Check it out on Prime Video. So yeah, it does seem to be kind of a trend in cinema at the moment that they're exploring. But yeah, obviously there are kind of like, you know, moral questions here. But I suppose the way they kind of get around that is like, well, these men are, you know, in their late 20s to 30s. But yeah, definitely there's something a bit dodge there.
Well, no, but I suppose if he's like the guy who said what age he was, he was like, he's a pop star or something, is he? He's no.
Oh no, no, sorry. In this one, he just works in kind of park maintenance.
The
pop star one is
he's
in
a
The
gardener.
Idea of You.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Sorry, I thought they.
Yeah, a true rock
good
star
with his hands.
I thought
you know?
They completely ripped off the thing. So, which is the Bridget Jones film that's worse than this?
See, I've only seen Edge of Reason once, but I really have a soft spot for Bridget Jones's Baby. I think that movie's adorable, and I quite like Patrick Dempsey in it, and obviously like Colin Firth is just always great, isn't he? Okay, it's really sad he's not in this. It's also, you know what it is as well about this movie is I don't know if it quite got the tone right in that, like, there are some bits that are very funny, some bits, you know, it's kind of hit and miss with the humor, but as well, I think that the grief element is something that I don't know if they quite get totally right, because at the start of the movie she's decided, okay, I'm revamping my life now, and the grief element, the fact that Mark Darcy dies, was a huge element in the Helen Fielding original series of books. She really, really wanted to incorporate that idea of, you know, death and what happens afterwards, you know. But when it comes to a movie, like, you don't want to see Bridget Jones like mourning any longer than it takes to sing a chorus of All By Myself, because otherwise it's not Bridget Jones.
Okay.
So they never quite get the tone right in terms of, I suppose, the sincerity you have to give when, you know, a character like that dies.
So in the film, how long has he been dead?
4 years.
Okay, well, that's fair enough.
Yeah. And there is a nice moment in the film where, like, her and the children are, like, writing, you know, letters to daddy. So it is, like, there are moments like that that are quite sweet. And maybe I wanted to see a bit more of that. So, yeah, I'd say it's a bit mixed. I did enjoy it, but I didn't love it, I suppose.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough. There you go. If you've booked your tickets, Deirdre has ruined your afternoon. It'll do business anyway.
Oh, I think
absolutely.
So. And you know what's crazy? So in the UK, it's already broken like pre-sales records. Like, it's outsold Barbie in terms of pre-sales.
What?
But in America, it's going straight to streaming. Americans don't care about our Bridget.
They don't understand.
They don't get her.
Yeah.
But we love Bridget just the way she is.
There was a huge queue in Rathmines a week ago because they had an early preview of it. And like 50 people waiting outside the cellar to go in and see it. You know?
Did you notice how many of them were men?
There was no men.
Yeah. That's what I thought. It'll be a Mickey free zone. I'll tell you, every audience for Leslie, tell us about our third wine.
Okay,
today.
So our third wine is from Lisboa, which is a wine region south of Lisbon and around Lisbon. They don't give us the grapes, but I'm guessing it's like the previous edition of this land. I think this is a new label of the wine we had on the show a couple of years ago. And that would have been Turiga Nacional and Tinta Franca and Tinta Roras. Tinta Roras is Tempranillo. The other grapes are specifically Portuguese. Portugal doesn't really do Cabernet Merlot. They, like, 7% of their wines are grapes you've heard of. The rest are Alfrochero and Bastardo and, you know, Dog Strangler and various things like this. There's
really, is there one called Dog Strangler?
That's what it translates as. I can't remember the Portuguese name of it now. And they used to have really weird names for grapes, you know?
Is there like a story then behind Dog Strangler?
I can't remember. I hope I'm not imagining that one. There is some really weird...
Well, you said Bastardo.
But Bastardo is used in port. Almost all port has some Bastardo in it, you know? Certainly if in the tradition.
There's some Bastardo at it
This is southern Portugal, so juicy, ripe fruit flavors, a little bit of kind of spice. Now, you notice it's not that warm. This is being served quite cool. I actually would even go a degree or two colder than this because we think room temperature is room temperature. It's not. It's room temperature in this lady's house over here with no central heating.
Right. Okay,
It's 18 degrees, 17, 16 degrees. And in fact, I think this would work better at sort of 12, 14 degrees or even lower. You know.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Just, and if you have a wine... it's very fruity, and I'm not sure I just think it's going to work better in that crispiness, you know? Just an extra element of freshness to it. So don't be afraid to serve your wine cool. In fact, I freak out waiters all the time by asking for buckets of ice for the red wine, and they're like, oh no, sir, it's a red wine. It's supposed to be. And I'm like, I know, just bring the bucket of ice and water.
You think a waiter would know that?
People just don't understand. They think, do you think room temperature 25 degrees? That's almost blood temperature. I mean, a lot of us have our houses at 25. That's mad. It would taste like soup. It'd be horrible, you know.
Oh, it's happened to me.
Yeah.
It's happened to me. I've been poured a glass of wine where it was a bit cold, so we put it on the radiator.
And then
it's actually warm. It's like a cooked tea.
Yeah, awful.
Yeah, and it tastes like it's gone off completely.
Yeah. So, look, I mean, this is going to sound slightly heretical, but if that happens and you're in a pub and the wine is warm because pubs are hot, ask for a glass of ice. Just drop an ice cube in. Now, don't dilute it, but just drop in an ice cube for, you know, 15, 20 seconds and bring the temperature down and so on. So that's actually what I do as well. If I don't want to be weird and draw attention to myself.
I couldn't think of you doing that would be a shock. What is The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo?
I'm surprised you don't know about this. It's a very big book. Very big and, like, good book. Because I know sometimes I come on and talk about, like, book talk successes and... They're not all great, but this is by Taylor Jenkins Reid, and it's very, very good. Came out in 2017, spent 120 weeks on the New York Times bestseller paperback. Like, very buzzy book.
Okay.
And it is being adapted for Netflix, and it had a director originally in Leslie Headland, but then Leslie left. So I think there was kind of a bit of questions around, like, is this ever going to happen, or is this going to be a bit naff? But there's a new director on board in Maggie Betts. Maggie Betts did... The Burial previously, which was critically acclaimed, came from Amazon Studios, starred Jamie Foxx and Tommy Lee Jones, and also did Novitate, which, again, another critical darling, not one that I'm super familiar with. Apparently, Netflix are still very much about this project, and it will be coming soon. If you're not familiar, it's basically about... the story is set between... Like, it's a conversation between a journalist and this kind of famous Hollywood star talking about her life and her seven husbands, and they're kind of she reveals more during this interview than people have ever learned before. So I think it will be a bit buzzy whenever it does come out.
I must say, I've never heard of it.
It's
you were nodding your head off there.
I think I've heard of it, but I haven't read it.
Sorry. Yeah.
Surely you've read it, Leslie.
It's the woman who wrote... It's the woman who wrote Daisy Jones and the Six. Sorry, did not mean to slam the table.
So it's
the same author, and that was already adapted for a series for Amazon and went down pretty well.
Right, okay. Yeah. But say, Daisy Jones and the Six was kind of roughly based on Fleetwood Mac. Is this roughly based on a real person?
Imagine like Elizabeth Taylor, someone who's one with the loads of husbands.
Elizabeth Taylor would be one.
Yeah.
It must be,
I mean, I'm sure it's an amalgamation of...
Elizabeth Taylor,
J-Lo.
She did a bit of repeat business in terms of her marriage.
Oh, so that doesn't count, does it?
Maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah.
Because Richard Burton, I think, was twice.
He was. Yeah.
So True Detective season 5.
Yes.
Yeah.
You don't care.
I did like the last one, but there was iffy ones in between. I'm wondering, is this kind of, is it diminishing returns with this?
I feel like the last season, though, Jodie Foster is kind of like reinvigorated things.
Yeah. Country was very good.
Yeah. Now, I liked it. I don't know if I loved, I don't know if it fully stuck the landing between, like, not spoilers, but like, there are ghosts and people are being murdered. What's to say? There was a lot going on. But yeah, it is confirmed for a fifth season, and it's Issa Lopez is working on it again. So Issa Lopez literally just did I was about to call it Cold Country. What's it called? Wild Country? Night Country.
Yeah.
So she's coming back, but it's going to be set in New York in Jamaica Bay. So, but no word on casting yet.
Okay.
Or sorry, casting's in preliminary stages, but they're looking to film in the coming months. So imagine maybe we'll get that next year. So,
yeah.
We'll see.
It's because Night Country worked because it was set in the Arctic and it was dark all the time. And so even the atmosphere... made for
it was a bit ooky spooky,
made it spooky. And
Night Country was an interesting one because it wasn't a True Detective series originally. They kind of ended up bringing it into True Detective because they saw some like commonalities and thought it would work as kind of a spin-off.
Yeah, because your man left the original, or I think he's still on it to executive producer, but he doesn't have an actual creative hand in it. Sorry, also, just before we came on air as well, we got the news about the Marion Keyes adaptation for RT, the Walsh sisters. Debbie Mazar going to be in it. Unreal.
Wow.
We also have Louisa Harland, who people know from Derry Girls. She's the crazy one in Derry Girls. I cannot remember that character's name. And she was in Renegade Nell. Like, really, really good cast. We also have Mairead Tyers, who people have seen in Extraordinary. She's been cast as Helen. Harland is playing Anna Walsh. And then you have Stephanie Preisner, who's also writing. She's playing Maggie. You have Danielle Galligan, who people know from Kin, and she's going to be in House Guinness. She's playing Claire. And then I said Debbie Mazar is playing Chucky.
Wow. And this is an RTE production.
RTE and BBC. Aidan Quinn is in it as well. And it's like the series. Wow. Yeah. The series is based on like an amalgamation of Rachel Holiday and Anybody Out There. And it'll be coming this autumn.
Okay.
That's going to be very good, I think.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. That's your tax euro at work there for you folks. Right. Let's move on to our second movie of the day. It is called Heart Eyes. Here's a clip.
Jay. Jay, are you okay?
You ditched me.
What?
We were a team.
I was being chased by a serial killer.
I know. I also was being chased by a serial killer. What the f*** does that mean?
Jay, you're tall and ripped and perfectly capable of defending yourself.
These muscles were not made for violence. They're for cuddling.
Okay. Hey, guys, this was not him. We were together all night. Hard Eyes was after both of us.
Ma'am? We found this man in the park wearing this. And in possession of this.
Come on! No, that's not possible. Jay didn't do this.
Maybe. Maybe Jay wasn't acting alone.
What?
What?
We're gonna have to take your tall, ripped friend into questioning.
Right. That's Heart Eyes. Judging based on that clip, full of big names.
Not quite.
Yeah.
I suppose they're relying on the whole, you know, big concept, which is kind of
okay.
The movie for.
Is this actually in movies, theaters?
Yes.
Or is it? All right, okay.
It's in... Looks that bad.
Yeah. It's some obscure streaming service you've never heard of.
So basically, it's kind of a genre mashup that we're looking up at here. It's like slasher horror meets romantic comedy.
Okay.
An interesting
one. A potent combination. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's called Heart Eyes. Basically, it follows the Heart Eyes killer who has been active in America for about the last 2 years. And now he's just settled in Seattle. Even though he primarily targets couples, he will also murder anyone who gets in his way. So those two characters that we met there, Ali, played by Olivia Holt, and Jay Simmons, played by Mason Gooding, are basically the latest two that he's decided to target. But they are not actually a couple. Basically, earlier that day, they had this like meet cute in a cafe, and then she had a disastrous meeting with her boss where she was basically like, you know, taken down in front of everyone for her latest pitch. And then Jay swans in and is basically like, hey, I'm going to help you, you know, fix this pitch. And she's like, no, you're after my job. So it's, you know, that kind of push and pull chemistry. He's a big romantic. She's a cynic. Will sparks fly, I wonder?
Oh, God, no. And why does the, given that they're not a couple, why does the serial killer target them?
Because the serial killer targets couples, and I suppose he thinks they're a couple.
So it's poor research on his part.
Well, I think he just sees and kills. He doesn't like, you know.
Oh, put a lot of thought into it.
Exactly.
Yeah, and so, like, they're in Seattle, did you say?
Yes.
Yeah, and so, does this guy send out press releases that he's moving to different cities, or how does that work?
No, well, the whole idea is that earlier that day, there were a couple of reports that there had been kind of murders in the area, so everyone is kind of on guard, and yet everyone's also just kind of going out and doing their normal Valentine's Day thing, and, you know, they go out to a restaurant at some point, and there's a drive-in scene, and all of those kind of typical bits. It was okay. So I suppose, like, horror movie wise, like, this would have made me think of the likes of, you know, Halloween and Scream and stuff like that. But I'm not sure that the genre mesh up always necessarily worked. I did like the two leads. I thought that they were very likable. There are a number of like cutesy moments there. You've got, you know, the odd jump scare thrown in there, although I just frightened easily, so maybe I jump scared. But there, it also has those annoying like horror tropes where you're like screaming at the victim, like, why did you do that? Like at one point she doesn't know how to use a gun, and then later in the movie she does know how to use a gun, but then she doesn't know how to shoot it twice, and you're just like, why? It's very frustrating.
Yeah.
But in terms of, I suppose the thing that irked me the most about it is that I like to actually be able to laugh at my horror comedies, and I didn't find this particularly funny, if I'm honest with you.
That's a flaw.
Yeah. And I mean, the cops there are like called Hobbs and Shaw, and there's a bunch of like, you know, falling around and stuff like that. So the humor is kind of basic in it. Although, mind you, maybe I was in a mood because I went to it with a packed audience, and there was a girl like a few seats down from me who was roaring her head off laughing. So maybe it's, you know.
Is that a problem that you go when you're in a mood and then, whoa, and it's one star from me?
Well, look, I don't think I was in a mood. I think that, if I were to go for one, I would pick Bridget Jones, but it could be because, you know, Bridget always has my heart.
Yeah,
always.
Absolutely. So yeah. Were the scary bits even scary?
No, but see, I think that if you watch a lot of kind of horrors these days, a lot of them seem to be becoming like horror comedies, like mashups. Like if you look at the likes of like Companion and even The Substance and stuff like that, I think that a lot of them are now incorporating like comedy tropes. And I think that's because there's a very kind of niche audience that's looking for pure horror now. I think that people are more so looking for escapism. They're looking for entertainment when it comes to these kind of movies. I don't think people like being scared anymore. They just want to be able to kind of have laugh and maybe those kind of like silly jump scares.
Well, the news is scary, you know?
The world is scary enough. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. That's our lot for the show today. Thanks, of course, to Fionnuala and Deirdre and Leslie. Thanks to our sponsors, Marks and Spencers, to everyone here at Langton's Hotel and our production team. There's always a big production team in these OBs. I know it looks like I do it all myself, but actually that's not true. And today it was Jack Lawler, Ben Griffin, David Slevin, Peter Malloy, Aidan McKelvey, Michael Quilligan, Niamh Hamill and Sinead Keogh. We're going to, Kieran's up next on News Talk, and we'll leave you now. The tune is called Back Waterside. Here's Lisa Lamb. Have a lovely weekend.
And the seas run dry. It's been you. Movies and Booze on Moncrief
with Marks and Spencer
on News Talk.